Peter, talk about your fascination and love of the band, of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I would assume it began prior to that first 1969 record and probably back in the days of the Byrds and the Springfield and the Hollies.
Well, I came of age in musical terms at about the same time that Crosby, Stills, and Nash made that first album, in fact. So that was really the first time I became aware of them. And they just had a sound that was unlike anything else, even in my adolescent innocence, anything else I'd heard. And there's something so magical about the sound of those three voices, Crosby, Stills, and Nash together. I've been fascinated ever since by that music and by the individuals who made it. And then, of course, when they met and joined forces with Neil Young, the whole story became a lot more interesting and a lot more confusing as well.
Yeah, so, and continues to be, actually. You did a great job on the book. I enjoyed it, although I have to admit that as much in love with this band that I have been, I have to admit there were a couple of times in going through the book where I would just shake my head and say, these spoiled brats, and almost want to put it down. But I trudged on, and I'm glad I did. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I guess what I'd say to that is, I understand that feeling. One of the things that links fans of CSN and CSNY, I think, is a great sense of frustration, because there's so much more they could have done and should have done if they'd had their head screwed on right. But what you have to remember is that these were four really young guys. Mm-hmm. When you think back at the height of their fame in 1970, the oldest was, David Crosby would have been 29. And the youngest two, Stills and Young, were only 25. So, in realistic terms, they were kids who were having to deal not only with enormous fame and enormous power and responsibility towards their audience, but also the clash of their enormous egos. And we have to admit it, they were also under the influence of enormous quantities of unusual chemicals and herbs as well.
That first album that we just mentioned from 1969, I think, is one of the most perfect records ever produced and released.
It is. Although it's an extremely well-produced studio product, at the same time, it sort of has an organic innocence to it that you get a real sense from it of what it must have been like in the last few months of 1968 to have been living in Laurel Canyon. Mm-hmm. And to have had these three guys turning up around your pool with their acoustic guitars and hearing them sing together for the first time. And all of that magic survived onto that first record.
Yeah, and from those days in the canyon, talk a little bit about the relationship with Cass Elliott and the band.
She really envisaged that partnership before they did. She was either directly or indirectly responsible for Crosby and Nash becoming friends, for Crosby and Stills becoming friends, and then for CSN getting together. But in fact, as early as the start of 1968, she had a fantasy. She imagined a band in which she hoped she would be a member that would include Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and her, and perhaps Paul McCartney as well. She loved the idea of this sort of huge amalgam of talent and voices coming together. So when CSN was formed, she was thrilled because it was the embodiment of the vision she'd had. And at the same time, she was really upset because she realized that they were perfect without her. So the only salvation she got was that she was the only outside person allowed to sing on their first album.
What tracks did she sing on? Because she's not credited at all.
She's just on Pre-Road Down.
That's right.
A Graham Nash song. You can hear her in the chorus.
Mm-hmm. Talk about a little bit, if I'm not mistaken, and I didn't research this, and I don't think you have it in the book, but their harmonies were supplemented along the way. If I'm not mistaken, Tim Schmidt from the Eagles, I think maybe Art Garfunkel, and as we just said, Cass Elliott.
Right. You're going ahead to 1982 when they made the album Daylight Again.
Yeah.
Which was outside the sort of time frame for the main body of my book. And the reason for that was that Stephen Stills and Graham Nash had got so tired of working with David Crosby, who was more or less incapable with drugs and whose voice had been ruined by the amount of cocaine he was taking. They tried to make a record that was just Stills and Nash. And so they brought all these other guys in, Art Garfunkel, Tim Schmidt, to try and fill the hole in their harmonies that David Crosby would have filled by himself. And then when the record company made them get Crosby back in the band, they kept those outside guys' harmony parts on the record. But I think that was the only time that happened.
You know, in the summer of 1969, it was in August, it was 2 weeks prior to the Woodstock Festival, where they made a big splash. I went to a pop festival in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and it was a wonderful 3-day event. And they were on the bill Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, although that's when Graham Nash, as you write in your book, had throat problems, polyps on his in his throat or voice box or something. So they had to cancel out. So I just missed out on what would have been a tremendous performance.
I know, yeah. Which is just the first time that they frustrated their fans, and they kept on doing it, unfortunately. But once again, I mean, these are the kind of pressures they were under. They were trying to rehearse at short notice for that gig and then for subsequent gigs as well. And they hadn't got modern sound equipment, and they were trying to sing harmonies over loud guitars. And Graham Nash in particular was prone to losing his voice because he was singing the highest and the hardest. Mm-hmm. And so it was his voice that was most vulnerable. And so this thing of Nash and Crosby losing their voice at sort of key moments of their career keeps coming back.
Visiting with Peter Doggett, whose new book is called Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, and it is a good read. Have you a favorite from the band, a favorite record from the band?
Well, that first CSN album, and of course the first CSNY album, Deja Vu, as well. But if I had to choose one record that only features three of them that I would take to my desert island for eternity, it would be the first David Crosby album, which to me represents all the sort of idealistic, utopian, hedonistic fantasies of that late 60s, early 70s period, and has some of the most beautiful harmony, singing, and also acoustic guitar work that you'll ever hear on any record.
Yeah, and even those one or two songs that have no words, just mostly he and Nash, but there are other voices, Joni Mitchell joining in as well. I totally agree with you on that If I Could Only Remember My Name CD. Peter, it's been great chatting with you, and I once again enjoyed the book tremendously. Where can folks find it? We'll put a link up on our website.
It should be in every bookstore or obviously on Amazon as well.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
And for Around Cincinnati, I'm Brian O'Donnell.